All right. Saturday simulcast. Brian Newbert, Tom Dienhart join me, and I'm Alan Karp with goldenblack.com. Want to thank our sponsor, the Purdue Union Club Hotel, reinvented hotel on Purdue campus. We're all getting through this pandemic, and they're working to, it's a beautiful facility. And the term reinvented really is true. You've got a beautiful 811 restaurant, the Boiler Up Bar. It's a first-class facility, and when you're back on campus, make it to get it in your wheelhouse. You'll want to visit, certainly. And also a reminder, too, we have 40-day free trials on goldenblack.com. We appreciate all of our subscribers, but if you want to become a subscriber, we encourage you to do so. Now is as good a time as any, and we do offer those 40-day free trials, too. So, all right, Brian, we had obviously last night in Purdue 70-53 loss to seventh-ranked Michigan. Disappointing, but it may have started, the disappointment or the challenge started 2 to 3 hours, at least from a public standpoint, that Sasha Stefanovic was unable to play during COVID. Matt Painter's post-game interview, interesting in terms of the protocol. I learned a couple things there, but you, I thought, did a great job of kind of rehashing something you'd written for about Stefanovic's role with this basketball team. Hard to minimize what he means, and you saw some of that last night.
Yeah, he's an integral part of what Purdue does. He's absolutely critical. You could make a compelling case about him being Purdue's most important offensive player because of that dynamic he adds. He's to use a little bit of a analogy, he's kind of like the wide receiver who takes the top off the defense, who, you know, spreads things out and makes defenses have to know where he is at all times, and that thus opens up the tight end and the running back come out of the backfield, and, you know, all of this stuff, the quarterback draw, all of that stuff. How they're going to guard Stefanovic is one of the first decisions opposing defenses have to make. And, you know, Purdue plays off of that pretty considerably. It's just a crucial element for Purdue, and one that on 2 days practice with the number 17 – I cannot say the number seven team in the country. I physically cannot do it without saying 17.
Yeah.
The number seven team in the country on 2 days practice without a guy that influential and that important just wasn't happening. I mean, that's just the reality of it. His absence, his fingerprints are all over this result. I think this is an asterisk you put on this result for the rest of the season. Doesn't mean Purdue can't win without him either of these next two games, but they need practice. They need a chance to, your term, reinvent themselves a little bit, maybe add some new stuff, maybe tweak some things, figure something else out, because he's just a crucial element to this team offensively, more than anyone probably even realizes.
Yeah,
Brian, I guess, you know, reading your coverage, you alluded to the what's next. You said the offense does not have to be reinvented, but it needs to be tweaked. I believe you said there's eight days now between games, with the possibility of that Nebraska game being rescheduled and that coming week off. So I guess from your vantage point, Brian, what tweaks would you make without Sasha to this offense to keep it functional and to give the Boilers a chance to win these, I guess, the Minnesota and Maryland games coming up?
Well, they're obviously going to keep getting the ball inside. Stefanovic's presence obviously affects that, too, because he's such an important floor spreader. The actions he runs open up angles, I think, sometimes to get the ball inside and whatnot. But I'm not really sure in terms of what Purdue can do offensively differently. I think maybe you just see even more kind of ball screen action to try to get your guards downhill. You saw that in the first half against Michigan. Purdue didn't do a great job finishing at the basket, but they got Jaden Ivey, they got Isaiah Thompson, they got Eric Hunter in the lane a little bit more. If Purdue can do a better job finishing, and, you know, it wasn't easy to do that over Hunter Dickinson and Austin Davis when he was in there. Theoretically, Purdue can be better doing that. But that might be part of it, just trying to get the guards to be more aggressive, attacking off the dribble and whatnot. If there's more stuff you can run to get Brandon Newman shots as opposed to getting Sasha Stefanovic shots, that's something you're probably looking into. But you got to get the big men involved, obviously. Brandon Newman's a very different shooter than Sasha Stefanovic is. Stefanovic is a different shooter than everyone else on the roster because he's able to catch the ball on the move and shoot on the move. And that's that particular player, that's particular category of shooter has been so important to what Purdue does offensively. That's what Carson Edwards and Ryan Klein were. That's what Dakota Mathias was. That's what a lot of these plays, a lot of these NBA concepts, and a lot of these sets and whatnot are based off of. That ability to come off a dribble handoff or a ball screen or a stagger screen on the baseline or something like that, catch and fire, make him really hard to guard. And it's not the same thing as just popping Brandon Newman into those plays or Jaden Ivey into those plays or Isaiah Thompson into those plays and expecting it to function. So they are going to have to do things a little bit differently from here on out. And that's where they need these practices. If they had a couple practices without Stefanovic, things might have worked out differently against Michigan. Had they had Stefanovic, I think this is a totally different game, because I think, you know, Stefanovic at minimum is good for another dozen points or so. You wouldn't have scored 53 points. So they're just going to have to figure something out. But the good news is, if there's any silver lining in this, at least it lines up with this 8-day break that you have, because Nebraska has too much COVID too. You were supposed to play Nebraska this week, but that's not happening. So Purdue does have a good solid week of both rest and practice here to, you know, try to figure out some answers before Minnesota.
Yeah, Matt Painter said last night they're going to have a couple of days off. I thought Matt Painter, in typical coach mode, hey, we got a lot of guys that want to have playing time and there's opportunity here. That makes some sense from that standpoint. This is still a pretty – but you do understand that this is a pretty young – you saw what it was, a young basketball team last night too. And Trey Williams, 6 for 19 inside. He had shots there that just didn't go, or they couldn't get to where they wanted to be. I didn't think Michigan was great last night. I thought that, like you said, it had things rolled a little differently last night. It really could have been a competitive game. Maybe obviously if Sasha's presence was a huge factor.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, Stefanovic would have been a 15 to 20 point guy last night, but he would have gotten you his 10 probably, and he would have opened things up for some other people. That probably would have accounted for some more offense. Michigan's really good. I think that obviously is something we shouldn't just glance right over. They're so experienced and they're so talented. They're good defensively. They're good offensively. That being said, Purdue held them to 70 points. So 70 points against the number 7 team in the country, a lot of the times it's going to be good enough to win. Purdue did a good job on the boards. Purdue shut down Hunter Dickinson. Purdue shut down Franz Wagner. Purdue didn't shut down Isaiah Livers, who I thought was going to be the hardest matchup in the game anyway, and was proven correct. But I thought Purdue did enough defensively, you know, to win this game. They just couldn't muster enough offense. And when you were playing offense with one hand tied behind your back, I think that's again, the asterisk that gets put on this outcome. I don't know if Purdue would have won this game with Stefanovic. That would have been a tall order still, but it would have been a much, much different game.
Yeah, Tom, we're going to turn the tables to football. Obviously, an interesting week. You've had a couple staff members hired. It appears that the defensive staff for Coach Jeff Brohm now is complete. You've had a couple commitments, or a commitment or two. We'll start with Brad Lambert and the hire there. And we talked last week about Mark Hagan returning, but certainly an interesting development experience coming to, you have to say one thing, Coach Jeff Brohm has gotten some coaches that have a lot of varied experience on the defensive side of ball.
Yeah, Purdue made that Brad Lambert hire official yesterday via social media. Mark Hagan was earlier, was still waiting out on the Ron English official word from the university. But yeah, Alan, we've talked about this before, the veteran component that's been injected into this defense, it's significant, you know. Lambert's been a head coach. Ron English has been a head coach. They both have been coordinators, obviously, too, at various stops. Mark Hagan's been a co-defensive coordinator during his career as well. So, yeah, a lot of brain power, a lot of experience designing running defenses have been added to this staff. I know, Brian, we talked Friday. I know there's that concern about maybe energy level. Can these, I guess, older guys, I guess I'm an older guy, can they bring juice to the practice field? We know Mark Hagan can, right? I mean, that guy could probably still pad up and play. I'm sure Brad Lambert and English are more than capable of getting after it on the practice field. The coaches I've spoken to about Brad Lambert in particular, you know, Jim Grobe and Jim Donnan, you know, they have effusive praise for the guy. They both have been very influential in his career. So as you would suspect, I guess, from those sources, they think very highly of Brad. And as far as I know from Grobe and Donnan, you know, their word is gold to me. So I think Purdue did a good job here, fellas. And Purdue needs these guys to excel because we all know the sense of urgency defensively to help this program flip the script on what's been three consecutive losing seasons. 2-4 record last year that finished with four defeats in a row. So, hey, spring ball is supposed to start in, what, about a month here. We're going to get an idea real soon, I think, of how this defense is going to look and these coaches are going to perform.
Yeah, I was interested on that, and I'll go to you, Brian, about the possibility of spring ball starting as early as February 15th. Couldn't help but think, as we're in such vaccine mode, you know, when this all ramps up, and I have known nothing about this. I'm just saying that, you know, and this doesn't necessarily affect Purdue and football, with the exception of maybe a spring game, is the fact that Ross H. Stadium, who knows, maybe a place where a lot of vaccinations will be going on. Again, that's complete conjecture on my part. But Brian, you look at this situation, and it is critical. Purdue's best teams. I did have an interview this morning with Anthony Spencer, which we'll put on the site, his birthday Zoom. He's 37 today. Talked about Mark Hagan, the recruiter. Talked also about Mark Hagan, the defensive, the tough-minded defensive guy. We don't know as much about Lambert and English, but you need to have some kind of personality on that defense if you're going to win. And obviously, Coach Jeff Brohm knows that.
Yeah, Tom mentioned energy before. Energy does go both ways, too. Yeah. I don't know if there's a more energetic coach out there than Bob Diaco, and that was a disaster. So I think energy, finding a balance between energy, experience, and the ability to connect to one's players, I think is really the most important part of this. But what Purdue needs right now is stability.
Yeah.
They can't be doing this, you know, fire the whole defensive staff every year thing anymore. They've got to just get some good, solid people in here who are going to develop players, connect with their players, and be productive coaches and recruiters and keep them here for a while, because, you know, you just can't keep doing this thing every year where you're replacing a significant amount of your support staff and your coaching staff. It's just, it's not healthy. It's not conducive to building a, you know, stable program. And that's what Purdue needs to get back to here, is they need to get back to the apparent stability that they were showing, you know, those first 2 years under this staff, where it just looked like everything was just going to be smooth sailing into, you know, that 8-9 win sort of yearly kind of deal before last season. They just need stability more than anything. And it seems like, I mean, based on what I know Mark Hagan, I don't necessarily know, I shouldn't say necessarily, I don't know Brad Lambert, I don't know Ron English, but everything I've gathered about them from the outside, you know, looking in, is that they're not, you know, they're not baggage guys. They're not coming with a whole lot of red flags. Whereas, you know, the last coordinator that was hired, we were, you know, within minutes, we were hearing horror stories from people who cover schools that he used to be at. And that's just not, that's just not the case with any of these guys, best we can tell. So stability is the most important part of this. Purdue's got to get some continuity, you know, off the field here before it can get continuity on the field.
Yeah, good point, and I think that's well taken. Tom and I had text exchange Friday afternoon, which I love. It's one thing, it's fun with it. We were talking about last time Purdue ever have a kicker from Australia. There are teams in the Big Ten that do, but Purdue got a commitment yesterday from Jack Ansell, a punter from Australia. But we think, and Brian, David Hedlund was the only
not Australian.
No, I understand, but non-Western Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere, and that's not the right term. Purdue's had a lot of Canadians. Hedlund was from Sweden, but Purdue's not, and there hasn't been anybody else outside of Canada in the United States and Hedlund that have come to Purdue that you remember. But obviously an important part, Jeff Brohm and Marty Biagi also want to be able to have, you know, the punting game has not been very good for Purdue. It certainly wasn't good last year, and an area that Purdue needs to have some work. So Tom, what's your take? I know you had a quick conversation with Jack as well.
Yeah, we FaceTimed last night. Great kid, first off. It's always fun talking to people with those accents.
Yeah.
again, just seems like a good guy. I mean, from from my 10-minute conversation with him. A couple of quick notes. I'm going to post a story here in the next day or so, but Jack will be on full scholarship. So that means Purdue will have two punters on full scholarship. Of course, Brooks Cormier, the sophomore last year from Tuscaloosa, is a scholarship punter. Jack plans to arrive in West Lafayette in May, and he's 23 years old, a right-footed punter. So, again, I'll have a lot more details, but he's excited, as you can imagine. But, you know, he's really only been working out as an American punter since 2020. Told me, of course, some of his workouts last year were interrupted by COVID. Says he has a unique style. And Alan, he's buddies with some of those punters you were alluding to in the Big Ten that have brought their Australian roots over to the Midwest and done very well. So, yes, Jack never punted in a football game, never an American football game, you know, never been in front of 60,000 people to punt a football. There's a lot of unknowns, and there certainly is an element of risk. But as I mentioned before we came on the broadcast, you know, I'm sure these other punters who came over from Australia had similar backgrounds and resumes as Jack, and they've done well. But again, there's a risk with any recruit. And as you said, Alan, Purdue's punting last year, to be kind, was a very mixed bag. 13th in the Big Ten in average, the punt block against Nebraska. I could go on and on. Three guys punting the ball last year, four if you count a quarterback. So this needs to get fixed, and at least Purdue's trying to address it.
Yeah, going to be an interesting storyline. All right, Brian, last word for this week. You know, obviously no games until Saturday, right? A week from today. Anything else that you want to bring to this Saturday simulcast?
Oh, yeah, just this is a really, really important week of practice for Purdue. I mean, they've got to benefit from rest, but they've got to also figure some things out on life without Sasa Stefanovic. At least two more games here without him. You know, Purdue had all the momentum in the world, you know, heading into the Michigan game, and then this becomes their – let's see, all the calamities Purdue's dealt with already this year, okay? Eric Hunter hurts his knee before the season. Ethan Morton gets mono during the preseason. Jaden Ivey has the foot issue in
December, yeah.
Right as soon as the season started. Yeah. Emmanuel Dewona, he probably wouldn't have been a rotation guy anyhow, but he's practiced like five times because of, you know, the fallout of this horrible thing we're dealing with. This team's dealt with a lot of crap already this year, and they got 10 games to play, 10 games with their full roster all available to them. I shouldn't even say their full roster, all their full roster of key players available to them. They went 7-3 in those games. They won four in a row, three of those games on the road, and then bam, this happens. So Purdue, you know, if anybody should know how to kind of adjust on the fly to something at this point, it's Purdue. This is the first of these issues that's been related to COVID, ironically. You know, everybody came into this year expecting landmines. And Purdue stepped on a bunch of landmines this year, but it just so happens that this was the first one that was COVID. So now Purdue has to adjust on the fly again, just when they were starting to kind of hit their peak. It reminds me a little bit, it's a different scenario because, you know, Stefanovic will be back, obviously, but it's almost like the year where Lewis Jackson was out early in the year, came back, played X number of games. Purdue was dominant in those games. Purdue looked like it was going to the Final Four, and then Hummel gets hurt.
Yeah.
You really had a very limited window of your whole team being available to show what you were capable of. And again, that's a bad comparison because Stefanovic will be back. Obviously you wonder what kind of shape he'll be in, how long it'll take him to get back to his where he was before. But, you know, Purdue has to take this week. This is a long answer to a short question. Purdue has to take this week and kind of figure out a little bit of a new way to go about things offensively because, again, Stefanovic is an absolute pillar of what they do.
Yeah, going to be an interesting storyline to watch. All right, guys, have a great rest of your weekend. To our viewers and listeners, thank you so much for joining us. I want to thank the Purdue Union Club Hotel, reinvented property right on campus a beautiful facility, to say the least, that's been put together, and we appreciate them as a sponsor. And a reminder also to folks that if you're interested in subscribing to goldenblack.com, please consider doing so. 40-day free trials, are available. Operators are standing by. We appreciate all our subscribers too. So have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next week as we'll probably be talking post-Minnesota game, I should say, as the Boilermakers' next game a week from today, which will be January 30th. Have a great weekend, all.